Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld.
This episode is produced in cooperation with Independent Art Fair New York City. It will be part of the fair's OVR.
I'm Daniela, and this podcast is about my personal and also about a lot of other people's enthusiasm for art. Art can touch on all parts of life, and therefore we talk about all parts of life. I hope to get you on board and to tell you interesting stories you enjoy listening to. We're recording via the internet, so please excuse any glitches and sound quality. This is episode 89, recorded February 21, 2024. My guest today is Janice Provisor. She was born in Brooklyn, New York, and currently resides in Litchfield, Connecticut. Janice is now in her 70s, and she received her MFA in 1971 at the San Francisco Art Institute. She is an accomplished artist. She has had a vast career in the art, showing in galleries all over the world, as well as having her work in many museum collections. And Janice will be having a solo presentation of her work with Halsey McKay at The Independent in 2024. Hi, Janice. Very nice to have you.
Hi, Daniela. Thank you for inviting me.
Janice, it's always really, really interesting to know. So where do people come from? Why do they do what they do? What were the first interests and impulses? So before you started studying at the Art Institute in San Francisco, at some point you must have felt, yeah, well, I want to be an artist. I want to go that way. How did that start for you? How did you grow up? Was your family supportive or not? All these questions.
Well, that's really interesting because I think I knew I wanted to be an artist from a very early age. My father was from Brooklyn, but my mother was from Cincinnati, Ohio, and after World War II, she was uncomfortable in Brooklyn, and they moved to Cincinnati when I was about four, and that's where I grew up. What was interesting, and I feel I was very lucky, is my father had not quite acclimated in Cincinnati. So he sent me and went with me at a very early age, starting fourth grade for me on my own, to New York to spend time with my aunts and uncles, his sisters, who were much more involved with the arts and culture than my mother. So I went to museums with them. They supported me in the beginning when I was making art. And I have on my report cards that I wanted to be an artist from the second grade on.
That's interesting because a lot of kids, you know, feel that it's kind of like they're forced to go to museums. So what was it when you went with your family to museums? How did you perceive the art there? What did it do to you?
I'm not quite sure what that was about, but I thought it gave me a window into looking at the world in a different way. And I love to make things with my hands. The two things I did, and I still do mostly, is I'm a bit lazy, except for making art. And I like to lie around and read books, novels. And I think I was the same as a child. And somehow in Cincinnati, I ended up at the Cincinnati Art Museum. And nobody knew how, but I must have gone with a friend. And at that point on, I insisted that they take me there for Saturday morning classes. So it was a part of my life in a certain way that was not in my household at all and not among my friends, you know, that are the crowd I was with. So when I applied to go to college, I wanted to go to just an art academy in the beginning. And my father was totally against that. All my first cousins were going to Harvard and Yale and other Ivy League schools. And I had no interest in that. And then I did end up going to a school, University of Michigan, and I majored in art. At one point, I had a lot of pressure from my father to become a lawyer like he was. I was the firstborn. This is actually a true story and sort of absurd, but when I went to change my major as I was doing it to political science, I broke out in hives.
Oh.
I mean, very emotional, threw down the paper, said, I cannot do this.
Your body just showed you no.
Yeah. My body just said, wow, no, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Now, because I think I always thought I wanted to be an artist, I didn't know what that was really about.
Yeah.
And so I think it took me a long time to actually get down to it, you know, and I don't think it happened. There was a lot of sort of breakdowns, transferring schools, feeling, how do I do this? What's it about? Not wanting to be stuck in the suburbs of Cincinnati, not wanting to go to New York immediately.
Why not?
Because all my relatives were there and the people I was close to, in a certain way, I felt that I would be overly dependent and wouldn't find myself. So I had never been west of the Mississippi, and I talked a friend going to California, and I finished my school at the Art Institute in San Francisco.
So that was in the 70s. So
yeah,
that was a special time in San Francisco.
Oh, it was amazing. we went in 1968. I finished my undergraduate there. And it was right after the Summer of Love.
Yeah.
It was an amazing time to be in San Francisco. It was free. It was open. There was an exchange of ideas with everybody. And interestingly, the art department was very vital then. It was vital for a variety of reasons. One, because there were a lot of guys there who were avoiding the draft, who were serious about making art, as well as a lot of women. So there was a lot of talk about ideas and a lot of actually making. And it felt so vital and energetic and full of possibility. And it was also a crazy time, of course.
And was it a good time for women? Because now we look at it with a certain kind of romanticism. I mean, if we ignore, like, for example, the Vietnam War, which was at the same time, but we have this hippie idea.
It wasn't a great time for women.
Yeah.
Although I don't think I knew that right away. When I got into graduate school, I was one of, I think, one or two women, maybe one. And I thought, oh, great, I'm one of the guys. You know, I'm as good as the guys.
At that time, that was the mindset. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. And it was ridiculous when I realized that. I mean, I just thought, are you kidding me? Just a year or so later, and I became involved in a women's group. Mm. And a lot of our thinking changed where we felt like we could demand things. You know, I will say that it's not that it's great now for women. Women, I still think, have a tougher time, even though, of course, we see women showing at every level in the art world, in the arts. But I can tell you that the women now have no idea, the young women now.
How hard it was, yeah.
They have no idea. My first two teaching jobs before I started being able to support myself and my work were two departments, one at California State University and the second, University of Texas. And I was the only woman in both of those departments when I started, 30 guys and me.
Wow.
And that was not easy. I was sent to get coffee, all the sort of stereotypes, all the stereotypes that we read about and think about. And you just had to be tough. Maybe some people weren't, but I just said, get it yourself, or okay sometimes. But I had some wild things that I probably won't discuss with some of these people in the departments that were just sort of insane. When you look back, talking about my living situations, my parents wished me to be married, didn't they? Things like that. It was just, you know, you wouldn't say that to the guys.
No, absolutely not. And also, you know, what people very often forget is if they see art in museums or galleries or somewhere, it's like mostly by already accomplished artists or artists that went a certain way. They never see the path they had to go to
get there.
To get there. And with women of a certain generation, and even probably up until now, if you want to reach a certain level, they don't even know how much harder it was for them.
That's true. It's true. There was a struggle that I don't even think that we noticed at the time. We just kept digging in.
Yeah, you just did it. You did what you did.
You just did what you did. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, I moved back. I mean, I've lived everywhere. A friend of mine who was a curator said, your life is like a journey. Well, I consider myself a New Yorker, and I actually divide my time mostly in Connecticut recently, but we still have a loft in New York and go down to the city all the time and stay at different times. But I think that I've lived pretty much everywhere. And once I started being able to support myself off my work.
So that worked for you. You did your art and you could support yourself with it.
I was very lucky, I think, that what happened was I had been teaching at University of Texas and I had a very cushy job. I was an assistant professor and I'm sure I would have gotten tenure because they actually, the department was being sued, one part of the department, for discrimination against Ooh. Women. So I knew I had a very cushy position. They couldn't do anything to me. But still, it was difficult. So what I did, I got a grant from the Ford Foundation, a small grant, enough to live for, I don't know, semester or more. And I was starting to sell some art and have shows. And we moved back to San Francisco. It was supposed to be just a semester, but I knew I was never going back.
Yeah.
So occasionally I would teach part-time. I taught at the Art Institute a class. Here and there I taught a class, but I never taught full-time again. And early on, I took my work around New York. You know, I can't imagine doing that now.
No, it's so different.
So different. And I had people that supported me. So I had sort of intros to several different galleries. And I had a very successful visit. And I ended up getting an offer to be in the second show at the new museum. Wow. And also, I met Holly Solomon, among other dealers. And she came out to see me. Well, she came out to San Francisco and came to see me as well. And from there, I had a lot of support from curators at the Berkeley Art Museum.
Yeah, she was an important gallery also.
She was a very important gallery at the time, mostly for pattern and decoration. And I wasn't part of that at all, but she was very important. And then I ended up moving to New York. It was a sense that I finally came home.
You also have a family.
I do. That came very late. Second husband, both artists. Brad Davis, who is my husband now, he was an artist also at Holly Solomon, and we met there. We moved to Aspen, Colorado, and worked there because his son from a former marriage was having some issues, and I ended up getting pregnant and having my son, Alec, who is now a filmmaker. He was born when I was 41.
Now it is much more easy to do that, you know?
Yeah, it was not easy. No, it wasn't easy. And yet, I think because we were older, it was a different kind of situation. Yeah. Brad was involved, very involved. But I felt once I figured it out, which was hard, I felt loose about it. And something happened in 1989. This sort of changed our lives. So it's important to talk about this a little.
Yes.
Crown Point Press. It was a very established and important etching press in San Francisco. Catherine Brown, the owner, founder of Crown Point Press, they printed a lot of Europeans. They printed many people from Wayne Thiebaud to people like Laura Owens now to across the board. And Catherine Brown was a visionary. And she had been taking artists to Japan to make woodblock in the traditional manner, a Japanese woodblock, like if she had taken Alex Katz and Chuck Close and many other people. And then she decided to try and do a project in China. And she took Pat Steer.
And that's 89 or 88.
89. She invited me to make prints in China. And we had been involved in Chinese art and collected it. Literati Chinese art, landscape, not contemporary Chinese art. And we said yes. And I went, and I would say that we had the trip of our lives. It was during Tiananmen.
Mm-hmm.
It was open. It was literally those few weeks. People were out on the streets. The making the work was really interesting. It was fascinating on every level. And we decided that we would come back at one time to live. And we did.
You did. Okay.
Yes. And so Brad and I, in the early 90s, took a year off. That was when the art market was pretty grim. We think about that was the first recession, 93, 94, unlike 2008, which was more intense. But we had enough money to just take off a whole year. And we went to Hangzhou, China, and we were in Hong Kong for a while. And we took our son, who had finished kindergarten, Alec, out of school. And he skipped first grade. He was an early reader. We said, you know, what's the problem? It could be, yeah, nobody needs first grade.
And what can teach you better than such, right, such a trip?
Oh, he had an amazing experience. And we threw him in while we were in Hangzhou. We threw him into this Hangzhou University, now Zhejiang University Kindergarten. It's a long shaggy dog story. But what happened was changed our lives enormously. Brad came home to me one day and said, you want to collaborate on a carpet for a rug, a silk rug for our loft in New York. So I said, yeah, sure, why not? And the apartment we were staying in was extremely rude compared to our loft that we had in New York. I mean, naked light bulbs, cold water kitchen. It was very rude. And one bedroom and the living room was our babysitter and Alex's bedroom. And we put a couple desks together, went out on the dirt road and got a large piece of plywood. And one side was his studio and one side was my studio. And we put that plywood over desk. And we started to design for this carpet. And we had a relationship with a retired carpet manager. And she couldn't speak English, but she would come to see what we were doing. And she put her hands over her eyes and she would say, Mayo, Mayo, Mayo cannot be done. And we said, well, why? Well, why? Because, you know, artists just do things, problem solvers, thinking, how do we make this? And the difference was because it was, they were watercolors and there was no software then. Now that's ubiquitous. We were the first people to do that. And all of a sudden we turned around and because it took so long to do, to get the carpets, we ended up having a business. Mm-hmm. And we created this company called Fort Street Studio. And most of our friends in the art world thought we were out of our minds. And I think I did too, actually. I think, what? And I had a very funny conversation with a friend of mine, his art advisor, Alan Schwarzman, who said to me, oh, well, when you were in that design world for a while, you weren't living there. You were just visiting. And I thought that was a great remark because that really was how I felt. So we stopped making art for a while because it was just overwhelming. I mean, we would look in the mirror every day and say, oh my God, we have to reinvent ourselves. How do we do this? It didn't come to us naturally, like being in the studio.
But you managed to make it work.
We managed to make it work.
And it was mostly carpets?
All carpets, silk, hand-knotted carpets. And a couple of years ago, Rizzoli published a book on us called Our Names, Janice Provisor Brad Davis, and it was called A Tale of Warp and Weft. And that sort of told our story, and I think it was really the swan song for us. We passed the business over to our senior vice president a few years ago.
That was a real functioning company with a senior vice president.
It was a real functioning company. We had employees all over. We had 3 showrooms, and we started painting again about 13, 14 years ago. And we kept moving away. And we had studios wherever we were, studio in Italy. We were in Normandy and worked for 2 months at someone's studio. He gave it to us. So bit by bit, we were throwing off the sort of shackles, you know, of business and getting back to our work. Such a great relief.
You know, there are a lot of younger artists who work with weaving or tapestry or, you know, wall carpets.
Isn't it so interesting? Because now textile art has become a real thing.
Yes.
When we began, any fine artist that were involved in design was really a no-no.
It was like with ceramics and a lot of other stuff.
Yes. And this was even more so looked down upon. Mm-hmm. And that's why we were very careful, not in the beginning, to have our name attached to the name of the company. We didn't want it to be that. We wanted it separate. In the first pieces of press, we wouldn't even let them take our pictures. I mean, it was a little insane. But we were so protective of ourselves as artists, and we felt that divide. And that divide, we watched that divide close.
Yeah.
But what we did was unusual because we did manufacturing. Other artists wanted to make carpets with us, but we didn't think of ourselves as a print publisher in that sense. So we decided that's not what we're doing. And we wanted to keep it separate. What our carpets were, and you can see them, there's a website, fortstreetstudio.com. What we did was, I would say, the first ones to do artistic carpets, but I was very clear it wasn't art.
Yeah, I see. And I understand the reason why. Probably now it would have been so much easier because all those gaps are closed. You know,
Absolutely. It's
not necessary to define what you're doing under such strict terms.
And it's so interesting to me because, I mean, doing what I did or what we did, but I did most of the watercolors. Brad did a lot of the more technical stuff. And we designed together, sort of. But I feel that it really opened a doorway to me for my work now.
Yeah, what happened? That's so interesting. You did all of that and then you started painting again.
This was a really interesting situation. A friend of ours has this compound in a huge studio in Normandy. And he gave it to us to use for the summer because he was off somewhere else. And we were nervous. I was nervous. And it was like we went upstairs, went to bed, came down and put our old skin on. There was just no break. I just started working on paper.
It's just your nature.
It was just my nature.
Yeah.
And for me, I need to do things hands-on. And while Brad was doing computer work for the carpets, I was out in the markets of Hong Kong buying beads and making jewelry, things that I could do without thinking the same way as you do when you're making art.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed to do things with my hands. But what it gave me, you know, there's an arc of one's life. And I'm in my 70s now, and I'm a very different person than I was in my 30s and 40s.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully. But some people never change or they can't imagine changing. But it gave me a sense of freedom to open up and explore ideas in my work that I hadn't done before.
Yes.
And it was about aging and women's issues, some text. But also about balance and paring down my life. So many things that I didn't think about before felt easier to do after this carpet venture. You know, I think that was so difficult.
I want to use something from your artist statement on your website.
Okay.
Which I really liked. You say perhaps it's like, I live my life super aware, with my antennae recording the world and politics in which we all live, while also living in a dream state on my own internal experience. And you say, it's a pas de deux between me and the canvas.
And I think that's true. That's exactly how I feel. I mean, I am very aware of everything that's going on. I'm somewhat of a news junkie. My head is not in the sand, but I'm not politically active in the way I was as a kid. I had a friend who said, I marched in the 70s and maybe I need to march in my 70s, which I thought was a great remark. But I feel that I can be super aware, but I have this relationship when I work. I think about how I start. I don't sketch, but I think about things. I draw with my hands in front of the canvas. Lately, what I've been doing for the last couple years, actually, but more so right now, things that upset me, things that I'm thinking about, like I'm Jewish and I'm thinking a lot about the war right now.
Oh, yes.
And the complicated feelings I have.
Mm.
But I start writing on the canvases. That's the first thing I do.
Like writing, like real words?
Real words. Real words. I don't write, I very rarely draw the forms I'm going to do on the canvas, but I write my feelings, my energy. So if I'm thinking about the war, or say if I'm thinking about right now, the painting that I'm working on at the moment, what I was reading about a few books, there was a story in the New Yorker of a few books that came out about American Jews and also about the Netanyahus. And the relationship that American Jews have to Israel. And I started writing all about how I felt. Diaspora, exile, Jerusalem, just free association. What do I feel about being Jewish? Putting the Stars of David down. This is all in crayon and graphite and markers. But you may never see them in the actual painting.
It must be also very torn in the moment.
Yes, it's very torn. Well, basically, how do you hold two ideas in your hand? The devastation of Gaza, which is beyond hideous.
And the atrocities of Hamas.
Right. And the atrocities of Hamas, and they say they will continue. And, you know, yeah. I think American Jews have always taken Israel for granted because it's good to know it's there. I don't have to go, but it's sort of okay in the back of my head. If I ever did, it's there.
It's a humanitarian thing. You know, it's so much used as a purely political thing.
But it's not just that.
It's humans. It's people. It's like real people on both sides.
I know.
Sides.
Both sides, real
on
people.
Both
who
sides,
are,
real people that suffer. And suffer. On both sides, real people that hate.
That's right. And the hate is enormous, and it continues and continues.
And so you channel that through your body, through your perception your work.
That's what I do. Yes. I mean, I've written a lot about how it feels about getting old. The joke is getting old is not for the faint of heart. You know, I mean, it's not easy. You know, it's so frustrating when your mind feels young and you feel your body is failing you.
Don't you think it's mostly about the body probably failing you?
Because of course.
My experience is like inside getting older is just the best thing what can happen.
Yes, I don't wish I was young. I have no desire to go back to that. You know, I do actually feel in the best of times I have more wisdom. I sort of know myself more. I feel freer to make art in a certain way than I ever have.
Yeah.
I feel what I'm looking at and what means something to me is really interesting and different than before. Although I see connections when I was young, I feel more able to do it. Now, maybe, you know, everybody, you carry yourself with you all the time throughout
all the
years.
Yeah.
Yes. But I do think that I have no regrets about getting older. And my mother died a year ago.
Oh.
Well, it's okay. It was a fractured relationship, but she was 1 month shy of 104.
Yeah, that's all right then, in a way.
Yeah, right. Of course. You know, she was ready. Last year was difficult. But we all thought she'd live forever. I really did. But I had a great grandmother that died on the Israeli border at 104. So it's interesting to see that arc and what you do with it and where you are.
And so that is all you carry with you when you start painting. So just
I do.
Talk me through the process. Like you start writing the words to get them out, which are
yes.
later there as a kind of like energy form, but not necessarily visible.
Exactly. Sometimes it's visible, sometimes it's not, because I'm usually a lot of blank canvas, letting the canvas show, or I'm painting it white. I'm painting quickly using liquid paints to paint. It's very liquid, which is unlike anything I've done before, but I'm practicing, or I would say I'm doing all kinds of, it's as if I was cooking. I'm a terrible cook and don't know the rules. And so I'm using different kinds of mediums, and so they do weird things that I don't know what's going to happen. And I like that. When I say that pas de deux, I'm dancing. I am responding to what's happening right in the moment, where my husband comes in and says, that is really interesting, that technique or that surface. How did you do it? I said, I'm not sure. And so he says, does that mean you can't do it again? I said, maybe.
That takes a lot of trust in the process, doesn't it?
It does. And that's what I've been going through. And sometimes it's very hard to build up to start because it's a performance in a sense, except that I don't think of it as a performance. I don't think of it as action painting or anything like that. It's not about a discussion of that, where I know some artists have done that. I'm not interested in the sort of conceptual idea of it.
How do you decide that it's finished then?
By looking. I let things dry. I put it up. I'm working on something now. I'm not sure. That's hard. Do I let it go? Do I add more? It's tough. That part is tough, to trust yourself. That's where the trust has to come in, where I feel it's engaging with the ideas that I've been thinking about. And I think about, well, I may write about my internal feelings about the world. When I'm painting, I'm thinking about a different kind of idea, form and balance and paring down and I think more about sculpture these days than actual painting. The things that I look at that intrigue me are building sites, large tubes that may hold cement that come out of the back of trucks. I don't have to know what it is for. I'm just looking at that form. I say, oh, that's really interesting, that sense of balance. I saw a show this past summer at the Aspen Art Museum we were visiting of Neri Bagramian.
Mm-hmm. She's an amazing sculptor.
Amazing. But what was interesting is I went with a friend who was an artist, photographer, and they had gone to see it before we were there. They lived there. And they didn't like it. They didn't get it. And I walked in, I was overtaken with it. I said, this is exactly what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a balance of butting up against something. It's the precariousness of life, that edge. All those things, how I interpreted it, what looks very casual is not. What looks like it could fall is actually stable. And they said that they saw the show completely differently through my eyes. They said, oh, I get it. I said, you have to get deeper and not just think about, well, that looks stupid or I don't get that. And sometimes we all feel that, of course, but try and see what she's talking about or how it affects you inside your body. I have a body experience of her work that I felt, while my work looks totally different,
but it feels like it.
Yeah, that's the kind of things I'm thinking about when I'm painting. But then I'm also painting with very hot colors. And that goes back to how I was in the very beginning when I was at the San Francisco Art Institute. And I don't have images of this on my website, but they all said to me and almost didn't let me graduate. It was very interesting because I was, quote unquote, to New York. People were very provincial. And San Francisco was known for a kind of Bay Area figurative work, which was not me, or a muscular abstraction. But I was doing these paintings that were on canvas and woven together of turquoise glitter and pink glitter hanging on the wall or woven together. I had some beads sewed on them, more like sculpture in a certain way, but I saw them as paintings.
You know, I think really it's the same like what we were talking before, that you used to kind of like divide the arts into the medium, you know?
Right.
I think that's over now.
Totally over. People ask me, and I'm so surprised, they say, well, what's your medium?
I mean, you can be a painter, but you can think like a sculptor.
Right, exactly. That's why I said, well, I sort of feel like I could do anything. I've been thinking of making some sculptures and incorporated things that
Absolutely.
I did before with the carpets. You know, and I'm not very good with my hands in that way. I'm not a great builder. Brad always laughs. But I, in my flat-footed way, I know how to make things.
Yeah, you know, there are two things. The one thing is really sort of like the art that happens inside before you put it out into a form.
Mm-hmm.
And then the craft where you do things for a very, very long time and your body understands better how to make it.
Exactly. Your body
knows it.
Your body knows it. When people would say to me, how can you early on do such big paintings? Because it was not my nature. I said, well, I don't know. I just do. Or this was very interesting. A dealer came when we had a studio in Brooklyn, who I won't mention, a couple of years ago. And I had only worked on paper because I hadn't started working back on canvases yet. And they were all over the room. He liked them quite a lot, but he said to me something that I found sort of confounding. He said, well, this is great and you can work on paper, but what makes you think you could work larger and make canvases for a better, you know, whatever you want to call them, larger paintings? And I looked at him and I said, really? I said, never occurred to me that I couldn't. And I made a joke. I said, well, buy bigger brushes.
No artist should restrict herself.
Of course, of course.
There's one thing you also said. You said this is a great time of life to be making art. So we're talking about the presence now.
Yes.
Great time.
It is a great time for me. And the reason I would say that is there are a few things. I feel like in some ways I'm a young person. It's tabula rasa.
Yeah.
I've started over, but I have everything that I did before, part of my body experience, my knowledge. So I feel this sense of freedom that I think dropping out and coming back has allowed me. That maybe if I had been struggling through, everybody has a different course.
Sure.
Everybody has a different path. My path led me to different places, but living in Asia, I mean, we lived there off and on for 25 years. I think it's given me a perspective that I might not have had before, or even who knows. Some people have looked at the work and they are surprised because they think that they were done by a young person.
Yes, I can understand that.
And I said, I don't feel young, but I feel open.
Oh, you feel alive, maybe?
Yes, I feel alive. I feel alive to the possibility of what I can do.
The possibilities, what you can do, would be interesting for me because we're talking also about your solo presentation with Halsey McKay at The Independent.
Right.
Is that something special you're going to do for The Independent?
I'm working on some paintings now. I have a lot of work to choose, and he feels, Ryan Wallace, who owns the gallery, there's a lot to choose from, but I'm holding back choosing. You know, we'll choose together.
Yeah, for sure.
He's going to come up and we'll make the final decisions, but I have a sense of what it will be. And I may want to do some of the images that I think are very direct and maybe more severe. I have been making a lot of paintings on photographs, and we'll discuss whether we'll show those. When I was living in Hong Kong the last time, off and on from 2013 to the end of 2018, I would take pictures, iPhone pictures of our bed. Well, I was in it, but there was no image of me. It was just the bed, the room. It was like, good night, Hong Kong. And I took about 100 of these, maybe. Before we left, I printed up large scale, about 50 of them. And then before the holidays, I started painting on them. I always knew I would do something. I find them really interesting. And somebody said, will they influence your paintings now? And maybe somewhat, yes. I don't know. I leave myself open to that. But there are more paintings that are on photos, and a couple of people have seen them, said they're not quite like anything they've seen before. There are a couple on the website. Those are the first two, and then the others are photographs.
So you're still in discussion what it's going to be in the end?
Yes.
You said that some of your new paintings are more severe.
I hate to say more minimal, but where there's more white space, they're a singular image.
More strict, more controlled?
More strict, maybe. I don't know, more controlled, but more strict. More strict in a certain way where I think what I'm really interested in is that liminal space you get to between abstraction and image. I've always used faces and they keep cropping up all the time. Eyes, I've always used, but I feel like I can not work in a specific series where you recognize the painting from one to the next, to the next, to the next. I might do a few like that, but I sort of feel that it all can be integrated. There are some artists that work like that and some artists who work really in the same series forever.
But you need that individual relationship to each painting.
I do. I need that individual relationship to each painting. That's not to say that I don't see something that happens in the painting that I want to carry on to the next one, but I need to make change. And, you know, there are certain artists that do that. And some people find it curious. Somebody said they went to see someone's show, Charlene Van Hyls, I think they said, and they said, oh, it was like five different artists. I said, what? No, of course not. So I think like that more, that I want to incorporate all that. And when you see a group of it, then you get it.
You get it, yeah.
You get it. If you see just two, then you're not sure.
What makes you most curious about like your presentation at The Independent?
Well, if I talk on practical matters, and that's what I'm thinking about for that, what makes the impact? When you have a show like Independent, where there's so many different kinds of things, or any art fair, although Independent has a kind of looser, more, to me, exciting, vibrant approach. Plus, it's a smaller show. I want to make an impact. It's great visibility for me. I think you can't show too much, so it should be coherent. And that's what I'm thinking about, how to make it coherent, but stay true to myself and what my ideas are so that I feel comfortable about the approach and what people will see. And I guess I'm thinking about impact. I noticed that the painting that I just almost finished with, I'm not sure, is very hot, pink, reds, purple. It's loud. It's simple in its form, and it is very sculptural, but it is loud. And maybe I'm thinking of making some noise.
Oh, Janice, that's wonderful. So I really hope you always can stay true to yourself and your paintings will have an impact.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for taking the time.
This was great. Thank you so much, Daniela.
This was a special Voices on Art episode created in collaboration with Independent Art Fair New York. Listen to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the platform of your choice, on our website van-horn.net, and in the Independent OVR at independenthq.com. Follow Independent Art Fair on Instagram at independent_HQ and the podcast at Voices on Art and at van_horn_Düsseldorf. Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.